This is the MLW Radio Network.
And welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Trigger. I'm as always joined by my man, Dylan. Dylan, last time we were here together, we talked about the G1 climax and its culmination. Now, on this show, we're going to talk about the N1 victory and its culmination, plus the Stardom 5-Star Grand Prix. I'm fired up. I got a Coke right here. I'm going to talk about the rebirth of the Supernova? Dylan? This is going to be a fun show.
I'm so excited to talk about this show right now, and all the stuff going on in Japanese pro wrestling, and all the stuff in pro wrestling. You know, right now, as we're recording, you know, you got big shows going on in America. You had some show at a castle last night. People were singing songs at the end of the main event. I don't know what was going on there. but
to be fair, nobody had any idea what was going on.
Yeah, one of the absolute weirdest endings to a show I've ever seen, for sure. Like, I mean, like I said, WWE, you don't always expect high quality, but This was something really, really strange that they did there, but not a terrible show otherwise, honestly, but the ending was just mind-boggling. You know, you got All Out coming in. I know a lot of people are excited about that. We're going to see, probably by the time this airs, you know, we'll see what happens in Chicago with that. And in Japan, N1. We talked about G1 last time, N1 this time. What one tournament are we going to do next? I think there needs to be more tournaments that end with one letter and one in them that we need to cover. That's the one thing missing from Japanese pro wrestling these days, in my opinion.
More tournaments with a one?
Yes.
Too bad
it has to be a letter.
Too bad Wrestle 1 isn't around anymore.
That's true. We have 0-1.
We have 0-1, but they have the Fire Festival.
Yeah, that's not the same as the G1 no. or the N1. It's not the F1. That's a racing event.
Yes, I think there would be some legal issues, I would think. not as if 0-1 had ever cared for any legal issues. So
yes, they just change it, much like New Wrestling Alliance.
Yeah,
for their titles. So.
Not Formula 1, it's Fire 1.
Yes, exactly. That's what they need to do. The Fire 1 Grand Prix. That's what we need to see right now. I can totally see that happening. The grift would be so heavy with that, but I would love it. You know, I'm all about this, all about skirting legal issues. But yes, I'm sure, to be fair though, F1 is probably not the company you should want to take on in any kind of legal battles, as they are very large, as we know. Many people love F1. You know, have you ever watched Formula 1?
Sure, I did when I was a kid. I was a huge fan of Michael Schumacher, who was a champion for like five or six times, I think. I watched it when I was like 12, 14 years old, but then I didn't really care for it that much anymore. And I know there is a big group of fans developing in the United States now because of this series that was on Netflix, I think.
Yeah, like Drive to Survive.
Exactly that. It was completely weird to me to actually see that because I hadn't heard about the series. I just out of the blue saw that a lot of people on my timeline started discussing Formula One, and like on post wrestling they started talking about Formula One. It was weird because yes, I really hadn't cared for it for years and years.
That's true. Yes, I think that's what initially. I mean, I've known about Formula One because I have followers and stuff that are big fans of Formula One, and people that I follow as well. So I know, like, passively of it, and I've seen it before, you know, when it was racing was a little bit bigger, you know, because there was a time period in America that was like racing was the jam, whether it was NASCAR or IndyCar racing, like, you know, which is open wheeled, and Formula One. I think there was a Formula One guy that jumped to NASCAR, and that helped make it bigger.
Yeah, I think he did. Yes.
It was like Montoya.
Montoya, I think it was.
Yeah. So, like, that made it bigger. But now it's like really now, like, even people in America are starting to really jump onto this Formula One. And I'm vaguely aware of some of the things going on, and I know the teams and stuff are a big thing. You know, because like with NASCAR, when they hyped racing before, and even Indy, like, a lot of times it's like built around speed or whatever. And in Formula One, it's more technical, like the, you know, stuff. It's not necessarily like everything's all about like who's the fastest. It's more like it's a combination of speed and also long-term stuff. So it's a lot different than the American style of racing. But I wouldn't be opposed to getting into it because, you know, I never had that childhood moment like you did, Stringer, where I was a big Formula One fan. But one day, the day is going to come, right? I mean, not right now because there's a lot of wrestling going on. At one point, I was literally covering 5 tournaments at the same time going on in Japan. There was Royal Road, N1, G1, 5-Star, Princess Cup as well. And even 6 if you go back to Fire Festival. So it's like a lot of tournaments happening all in the same period. I think perhaps that should be rectified next year, perhaps.
There's going to be more. There's going to be more tournaments. The Tenkaichi, 01 is going to have a Tenkaichi tournament in the fall as well. Kyushu Pro, they are going to have their Kirkan debut with the Global Tag League. So lots of stuff coming up.
I don't mind that. I'm just saying, there could be tournaments all year. I just don't want them all at the same time. It's the problem. Like, listen, I'm a CML fan. They went through a period where there was tournaments almost every show, and everybody would joke about it on there. So it's very fun. But I will say that as we get into the show here, talking about Stardom, Noah, I've really taken on a lead role, I guess, even though I am always the leader of this, but, like, I've taken a more vocal role in terms of writing on the Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat. I've done a lot more of that recently, where, you know, basically, it allows me to cover things and add more variety to the Patreon instead of just doing audio all the time. So in all of that, I've covered pretty much everything, and as we get to the show, if you want to read, like, all the reviews, whether it's written or audio, Patreon is your place, the $5 tier. Hey, Noah, you can get on all the tiers, even, like, $1, you know, Noah's everywhere this year. That was the company. I always pick one promotion to focus on for the $1 tier, but Noah was it this year, and you can watch it or read and listen to all the reviews and stuff. Very good stuff, ratings, recommendations, gripes, and stuff. Anything I have to say, and some even some pretty interesting, you know, analysis of things. I like to think anyway. So you get that. You get covering all those American shows as well, the big shows. If there's a big show, I'll check it out on there and do something with it, whether it's written or audio. But lots of fun stuff going on there. But I can't imagine any other show or anywhere really covering all of these tournaments at the same time and all of these things going on to the extent that we have between the free show and the Patreon, because we know we were here on the free show with all the G1 stuff as well. Yes. And we got all the matches there, and now we're covering all these shows. But if you want the in-depth singular match breakdowns, because we're not going to go over every single match of the tour, unless you want to talk about every single match, we could do that. That's fine, but I don't think we will. But nope. If you want to see all that and hear all of that, you definitely want to check out the Patreon, because there's a lot of work going into it right now with the writing and the audio. So it's a very cool thing, in my opinion, too. I hope to think. Anyway.
Yeah, please check it out, as Dylan said, patreon.com/EasternLariat, and you're going to drop some of these knowledge bombs here on this show, I guess. So we are going to start with the N1 victory, and as I said at the beginning of the show, possibly the rebirth of Supernova Kaito Kiyomiya. Dylan, I want to first tackle this run that Kaito has been on for the last couple of years, because I thought it is completely funny how this all is attached to Keiji Muto. Because remember when Kaito was GHC heavyweight champion and he faced Goshi Ozaki on January 4, 2020. I remember that you were really, really sure about Kaito defending the championship and didn't one second think about that he would lose the title to Shiozaki, because in your opinion, his run hadn't come to a conclusion yet, because it was basically, it had started a couple of months before that. And I did agree at that point, but I don't know. I had the feeling that Go might just win the title because he's Go. And so it happened. Kaito lost the title. And the day after that, they had this mystery show, January 5, 2020, where Keiji Muto made his Pro Wrestling Noah quote-unquote debut. And he became a regular. And he became a contracted wrestler. He became champion. And after that, Kaito Kiyomiya, of course, always played a role, but it was never like Kaito Kiyomiya would be anything of a main event player anymore. He was a GHC Tag Team Champion for one run after that only. He was contender for the national title, but he never regained his main event status that he had prior Keiji Muto coming to Pro Wrestling Noah. Then he had these singles matches with Keiji Muto, which he lost. And then this year, Keiji Muto announced that he would retire from pro wrestling. And all of a sudden, all the steam was back behind Kaito Kiyomiya. Keiji Muto portrayed him as the guy that he would give his moves to. He trained Kaito. Kaito is now using his moves for his big match finishes, even using his poses, and I think we're going to talk about that as well in this match. And all of a sudden, it seems like he is back on track where he left in 2020. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking back now to all of that. I still think one of the big mistakes, I mean, it's hard to say if it was.
First of all, I forgot one point, and I'm excuse me.
Yeah, go on.
I'm not saying that Keiji Muto is responsible for downfall of Kaito Kiyomiya. That's not what I'm saying. But it's something that struck me when I just looked at history.
It's a timing thing, right? Yeah. There. I remember when that happened. You know, one of their big mistakes, in my opinion, and I especially think that now, considering where he's at in terms of his look. You know, if you remember back, I think a lot of people might, you know, there's been a lot of new fans in Noah over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. You know, some people dropped in, some people dropped out, that type of thing. But I really never understood why they just basically removed Kaito's gimmick and gave it to Go. Like, you know, at the time, because not only did he win the title, he came out with a look that was nearly exactly the same as what Kaito had, which was never Go's look before, or any part of his gimmick. Yeah. It's like, remember last year, or not last year, actually, the start of the year, with the Budokan show, where it was Go versus Nakajima. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to do this callback match, but the spot, Go is more of a Kobashi guy, historically. And they kind of portray him as a Misawa, like the I Am Noah and stuff, which was never his gimmick before at all. In fact, he left Noah going in there.
And
so why? Yeah,
I need to interrupt, because Kaito Kiyomiya, after winning the N1 victory this Saturday, he took the mic and said he will never betray Noah. So with that added to your analysis of that could be viewed as kind of a shot at those that had left and came back.
Yeah, and it's like, I never understood why back then, even. Like, why? I mean, it worked for Go because it's a great look, and obviously it's like a totally ace look or whatever. But I think that's kind of a mistake, actually, because Kaito, and I feel about this. I was watching this tournament multiple times. There's been multiple things, you know, like, for example, Jack Morris using the Tiger Driver, which we'll talk about him later. But to me, the one representing Noah should be Kaito, not, you know, these other guys, you know, going in there. And like, when I remember when that happened, and I thought Kaito, I, you know, we saw him, they started out at a certain point and they got up to the Sumo Hall spot. Nobody thought they would succeed in it, and they did. And he was the champion for all of that rise up. And then they just changed the title to Go, you know, and things happened how they happened. We can't go back and change them. But it's not like I regret it. I didn't do it. I wouldn't have done this. But I wish that they had not done that, just giving Go's look to, or giving Kaito's look to go, because now we're at where Kaito's at in terms of a look, which is significantly worse than what he was doing when he first came in as champion, I would argue.
And it's not even like that he only dropped the outfit and the colors, but he also dropped a lot of the Misawa-esque moves that he used to have when he first won the GHC heavyweight title. And now, when you look at the finishes that he had in the N1 victory, he won with a modified Shining Wizard, he won with a figure four leg lock, another one with the Shining Wizard. I think he won three or four matches with the Shining Wizard. And everything that he does usually fits really well, but this Muto-isms, they look completely unnatural, I think, for Kaito Kiyomiya, and they just don't match the rest of his approach to wrestling, I think.
No, and I really don't like that finisher at all. Not just because of Muto-isms or whatever, but I don't think he does it very well, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't like his finisher at all. And I don't like that he does it 3, 4, 5 times.
Yeah.
As well.
It's a lesser version of the Shining Wizard where he has to step up.
It's time to get rid of that. That was like the one thing that messed up the finals, in my opinion, was that that finishing sequence. Like, it didn't mess it up, but it was like, I'm just not a big fan of this as a finisher at all. Like what he's doing. Like, I don't care about. Like, I mean, I do care. I don't like that he has to impersonate Muto, and you have Hideki making fun of him for it before the final of the tournament. But I don't like the move, even if nobody had ever done it before. I still would have think this finish kind of sucks. So I'm not a big fan of that. You know, overall, like you said, he had a lot of Misawa references early on, and I thought it was perfect for him. And everything he represented was so well, and it's gotten so muddied. And, like, his character specifically, over this journey, has gotten so messed up from where it was when he was champion. And, you know, I think it really hurt me heading into this final with him, because, you know, the tournament, the way it set it up, was really built around him, you know, getting to the final, winning the tournament, obviously. But when I look at him, I look at his outfit, and I look at his finishing move and stuff, and I was really doubting, and this is a guy I've really loved over the years. I think he's been a great performer, and I think he's still a great performer. He's a great talent. Up there with the best, you know, of the ace guys. I thought he was arguably the best one in terms of in-ring back then when he was the champion. I think he was very underrated, in my opinion. But now I look at him, and like I said, you see the outfit, and I don't know. It just feels like a lesser version than what he was doing before with the Noah references, which greatly benefited his character and also gave the fans something to latch onto as well that had a lot of history to it. This Muto thing, it has history somewhat. You know, it took them a few years, but not to the level of Misawa and Noah, that his natural representative, of which we don't really have anymore. It either. Like, there's really nobody like that in the company right now that's a true representative. Like I said, they tried to do it with Go, but, you know, like that's not true at the end of the day. Everybody knows he's a Kobashi trainee. You know, Nakajima was Sasaki, and then a lot of people were much newer. So there's no real lineage to Misawa right now, outside of maybe like your Mar Fujis, obviously, people that were there back then, Suzuki and whatnot, Kotaro Suzuki. So you have guys that were around back then, but then all of the new guys, it's like there's no real lineage to the history of the company, and that's something I missed, because he was that guy, and he was great at it. And now this new version, I think in presentation, they didn't do him a lot of favors in this tournament. Again, it's mostly his talent that made things work out as good as they did, I would argue. And like I don't think, because that's the thing, everyone was talking about how well he was built. And I mean, he got some, you know, he lost early on and got some wins later. Very traditional story for, you know, for tournaments. But the presentation of it all, like I said, the look especially, I think is just, it's not doing him any favors at the end of the day. And I just, for a lot of this tournament, I'm like, I don't see an ace when I look at this wrestler here. Like, I just don't see that with him. And not to say that he can't get there, you know, or not that it won't be a big moment when he wins because of who he is and all that, you know, all that he's meant following the company, so to speak. And we can hope that they do that, or, you know, who knows what will happen in this title match coming up at the end of the month. But when I look at his look and how he wrestles, I wish that we could I wish we could tweak this a little bit to where it was more ace-like, in my opinion. But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I mostly agree with what you said. There's a lot of moving parts with his character. It feels like that there's... It's basically like it's a puzzle right now, and they need to shuffle around the pieces to make it a complete picture of what Kaitokumiya could be in the future, or even going forward here in 2022. And right now, these parts don't really match well, but his overall talent is there. That's clearly there. His colorful look is more like once again with his, like his moveset aligned with more like Keiji Muto than anything else. So we'll see where this is all heading. But Dylan, what we saw in the final against Hideki Suzuki was that Kaito Kiyomiya is immensely popular amidst the Pro Wrestling Noah fans. And they gave us this shot, this camera shot after the match, where they found some women in the crowd weeping for Kaito Kiyomiya to win this match. And you could feel it during this final that it was all set up for Kaito Kiyomiya to come from behind and to beat Hideki Suzuki in the end, who, either way, Hideki Suzuki is, in my opinion, unquestionably the MVP of this tournament. He had most of the guys' best matches, I think. I absolutely loved the match that he had with Kenno, and I absolutely loved his wrestling here in this match against Kaito Kiyomiya. Because it was clear from the get-go that Hideki Suzuki's role would be to brutalize and to put pressure on Kaito Kiyomiya with all the holds and all the back attacks that he threw at him ringside and in the ring. And it was Kaito Kiyomiya's mission to overcome this guy that would just not let go from him. And I was reminded to one of my favorite matches ever, Dylan. You know that? Hideki Suzuki and Yuji Okabayashi, because in that match, it was actually a similar story with Okabayashi having to free himself from the range of Hideki Suzuki and Kaito Kiyomiya in this match. He also did that with a lot of his drop kicks and stuff and tried to free himself until in the final moments he could go back to the moves that Muto gave him and beat Hideki Suzuki with it. So from that standpoint, I really, really loved the match. I was taken out by the finish. And as you said, the finish didn't really work out like I think it was supposed to work out. But except for that, I thought it was a very, very good to great match.
To me, this was probably... I mean, like, Hideki Kenno was my favorite match of the tournament heading into this, and I think this is mm-hmm. right up there with that. This had the more important than the emotional aspect of it,
yeah,
as well. You know, finish aside, I wasn't a big fan of that either, but I really liked the match. I thought it was a really awesome match, like probably one of the best of the whole year.
Was heavily into it. Yeah,
yeah, like it was a great match, and like not just emotionally, but just technically and execution wise, I thought they mm-hmm. were so good, you know, that I loved it. I'm so glad that they did this for a final. You know, overall, I thought it was a great choice to put Hideki in there. You know, I think they've done a great job with him throughout the tournament, and obviously the only thing is, it kind of hurt going into it because he was the tag champion already, and that kind of tipped me off that he probably wouldn't win, because I think they built everything up so right with how they booked A-Block to where they definitely had scenarios to where it would have made a lot of sense for Hideki to win going mm-hmm. in there. But because he was tag champion, I was like, they probably won't put him over. Like, it'll be Kaito. And it makes so much sense, and there's nothing wrong with putting over Kaito, obviously. But I loved Hideki's tournament. I mean, Hideki, batting average-wise, you know, like, just his matches overall all year, to me, he's the best wrestler in Japan, actually.
He's amazing. Like, and this match, too, had, just like the Kenno match, this match had so much great care for detail. Just, I think one of the greatest moves in 2022 is Hideki Suzuki working the STF. The way he applies it and the way he slowly but surely gets the guy trapped more and more into the hold is just incredibly captivating. And this was one of the moments in the match too. You say, of course, yeah, he was tag champion, and probably he wouldn't be put over in this match. But when he had Kaito in the dead mid center of the ring in this STF, I was thinking, how is Kaito supposed to get out of this? He has to tap out right now. Or even the two count after the first double arm suplex was so close to three that I was ready to buy that Hideki Suzuki was actually winning the match. And that once again shows the quality of the match, because in similar situations where I was so sure who the tournament winner would be, I wouldn't be so invested in these falls or in these submissions like I was in this situation.
Like I said, they built up Hideki so strongly. Like I said, I thought they booked the tournament really well for the most part, especially the A block. I thought that there was like a perfect finish to have Hideki get to the final as they did. And Tim Thatcher was there as well, which also made it better as well. Like, he showed up at the end. But that three count spot, or near fall three count spot that Kaito has, that's something I've always pointed out and said that he was amazing at. Mm-hmm. That's like these little things that I think it takes to be an ace level wrestler. That's one of them. Like, make your kickouts, you know, very believable and great. You know, Tanahashi's great at that too. Like, the perfect 0.999 kickout, like, type of deal. Like, use those. It's so perfect. Kaito's great at that. He's always has been. And like you said, that was a great spot. The match was amazing, I thought, overall. Like I said, Hideki was awesome in it, as he always is, because he's the best, you know, and I love him so much. And Kaito is a great wrestler as well. So I expected nothing less than what they gave us. And it was a really strong match and a great final for the tournament. And, you know, ultimately, you know, it was the right winner overall, for sure. You have to keep up the momentum. He finally beat Muto, and now he has that in his back pocket, this N1 win. That was cool. He got a great speech. Like you said, people were emotional at the ringside going in there. And he's always been, he's always had a great look to the fans, been popular with all the demographics, men, women, everything like that. So he's doing a lot of great things, you know, and his amazing talent. He deserves it, because he's, like I said, he hasn't been presented the greatest over the last couple of years. And he's definitely taken a step back from where he was as champion. But now we're getting there. It feels like we're on the right track with him. It's going to be interesting to see how this title match goes going in there with Kenno. But
yes. What do you think is happening in this match?
It's tough, because, like I said, throughout the tournament, it didn't feel... first of all, let me back this up a little bit. Mm-hmm. For this final show, what did you make of the attendance?
The attendance was close to 3,000.
Yeah.
I actually have not... Let me see what New Japan did during the G1 in Osaka.
This was from Eddie and Arena Osaka, by the way.
It was Eddie and Arena, yes. New Japan was there too, and they... One time they drew over 3,300, and the other time they drew 2,600. So I actually thought it was a decent attendance.
I thought so too. And there are a lot of shows on this tour which were not great attendance. Especially yes. Hiroshima had a really poor house, because I was following along with this on my Patreon reviews and stuff. And Korakuen Hall was low. I mean, they always don't do great in Korakuen.
No, they run that venue much too often.
Yeah, they don't have a lot of interest to do that at the end of the day. But there were some shows that were not great throughout the tour. But this final show did good. That was kind of where I was going with that. You know, like, the final show was good, and the rest of the tour wasn't that good. So I thought it was interesting that there was interest in this final match. And I mean, like, this final match, I mean, this was like the ultimate one-match show, in my opinion. The rest of the show was dreadful.
Yes.
This was not a good show at all overall.
Like, there's nothing that we could actually talk about that is of any interest level, actually. All the matches just were there. They happened. You could point to the Junior Heavyweight Tag Team title match that was nice for Chris Ridgeway to come back for.
Yeah, that's cool seeing him.
He and Ogawa did a nice job of taking out Eita's knees and Eita's legs. Kotaro Suzuki was there too. The Dragon Bane and Alpha Wolf match, this match went for 16 minutes, and they just kept doing stuff and doing stuff and doing stuff. This was a 10-minute match, but they just dragged it out to 16. It is not to both guys' forte to have this kind of match.
And we've seen that already. Like, they wrestle each other every time they're here.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, that's why Ninja Mac got so over when he was there, because he was somebody different, like, doing a similar style in a lot of ways.
Obviously, but they just don't trust these guys to wrestle anyone else.
Well, like, I mean, the point is, this show sucked. Okay, there's nothing to talk about. The only thing of interest besides the final was the semi-main. And obviously, that wasn't going to be a great match or anything. But, like, that was the only thing that they kind of, from a promotional standpoint, that the junior title, that stuff doesn't matter at all. Like, the semi-main event, the Muto deal, that was something. I mean, obviously, it wasn't going to be a great match. But the only thing on this show, really, of note, was the main event. And they still did a very good number, I thought, for what was a pretty lackluster tournament overall, attendance-wise.
Yeah.
So it showed me that there's interest, especially, I think, in Hideki doing big things there that I was anticipating. And also Kaito. I think a lot of people were expecting Kaito to get his big moment here. And I think that shows you that the fans, despite everything that's happened over the last couple of years, the fans still ride with Kaito. Enough on this. And, I mean, we'll see what happens with the title match. But I wanted to bring up that note because I thought it was interesting. Like I said, if you look at the tour, I followed the tour pretty closely in terms of attendance. Probably better than anyone, actually, like now that I think about it, because the coverage isn't always the greatest or most varied. I saw that, and I was impressed with the final number. I think it shows that there's interest in these guys. And it was a fresh match. It was a cool match. And they did a great job in it. So, like, probably one of the best matches all year, in my opinion, in Japan, that match.
Yeah.
The title match.
Before we go to the title match, I have one more point to the attendance, Dylan. Sorry.
Yeah.
Now that you brought it up, actually. And you brought up the great Muta match. And this was billed as one of the last great Muta matches. How many last matches is he going to have? He's going to have many last matches, of course. And the thing about it is, they built it as Osaka final for the Great Muta, saying that this was the final time that the Great Muta appeared in Osaka. And when you look at the attendance then, I think that you could say it was a little bit disappointing, because, of course, Great Muta is supposed to be the legend that draws in the crowds. But here I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think it would be different if Great Muta had an appearance with the New Japan Pro Wrestling, do you think the attendance would be higher? The interest level would be higher.
Yes, absolutely. That's been my point all along with Muta.
Yes.
Is that he's not a Noah guy. Like I said, we had that one, you know, when they went back to Budokan, and who's to say that was even him that did that? Like, it could have just been Noah going into Budokan. After then, it's not like Muto has raised attendances to this huge degree, you know, even when he was champion. Like, I mean, they were, you know, they did their thing, but it wasn't like things took over or anything like that. Like, things flipped on its head just because of Muto. And, like, the Noah fans don't have that resonance with him. And I'm not saying he's not a big star, because he is. I think in New Japan, he'd be a huge star. Like, that would be a mega deal, which they teased after this match, by the way, in his post-match interview. So it's clear what he's angling for, which anybody with a brain knew anyway. Like, that's what he was angling for. If he were in New Japan, that would be a huge match. Like, no matter what it was. Like, you know, I think that would be a very, very big deal. He's a very big star, historically. You know, say whatever you want about him, he means something to the fans, especially New Japan fans. But we've seen Muto, what he means to Wrestle One, and what he's meant to Noah isn't that great, because he's not in New Japan, you know, at the end of the day. And I think he'll always be seen as a New Japan guy to a lot of the fans. And he has history with All Japan, too, obviously running the company for that decade. But I think to most of the old school fans, and even going back, and, you know, this is all before my time, you know, when I came in, he was late into All Japan. You know, he was about to leave All Japan, pretty much. But to me, when I watch him, I think, like, when I think of Keiji Muto, I think New Japan first among all the promotions. So, and New Japan is the biggest promotion, obviously, so it would be a bigger show, no matter, you know, even if it was nobody coming in. You know, but I think him specifically in New Japan would be a big deal, and much bigger than Noah. There, like I said, I don't think it was disappointing, because he's not shown an ability in his past matches. Like, look at the one a couple of months ago where it was him versus Kaito, and then you had Kojima and Kenno in the main event, that was a poor showing. Like, that yeah. didn't draw very well. So, like, nobody should have had expectations for a New Japan, like, Muto house, in my opinion. I think for the expectations, and considering how they were down the entire tour, I think it was a good number, honestly.
The title match.
Oh, yeah. The title match, Kaito and Kenno. I really wish they just drug this out into the Budokan. I think that's something they should have thought about doing. Similar to how Okada did it in G1, they should have just said, look, whoever wins N1 gets a title shot at Budokan. In my opinion, that would have saved everyone a lot of headaches and a lot of hassle, because now we have to figure out what we're going to do now on this one-month notice title. I mean, they have a lot of history that's going to help them. These two have a very long rivalry ever since Kaito came back originally from Excursion. Mm-hmm. So that's going to help a lot. I think that you could really make a case either way, but to me, I think Kaito should win. Just because he has the momentum of, you know, he's been through so much over the past couple of years, so many losses and down points. Now he's finally got two big wins in a row to his career. He beat Muto. You know, say what you want about how it happened or whatever, but he beat Muto. He won the N1 in an incredible match. People were crying. I think you should just keep the momentum up and put the title on him.
Yes, I would agree. To keep his momentum alive, I would completely agree with that. Then again, what puts me off here is the two matches that Kenno lost during N1.
And that's what that was kind of where I was going with that, like how they built up Hideki. I think those losses to Kenno, like, that set up a believable path for Hideki to win, going in there. Mm. But yes, I mean, just continue on with your point.
Yes, so the two matches that Kenno lost were against Masato Tanaka and against former champion Katsuyuki Fujita. And of course, because of Fujita having to drop the title because of, was it because of COVID or anything else? I think it was because of COVID.
Yeah.
There is, of course, interest, specifically, of course, from his side, to get back into the title mix. And with his victory over Kenno, he, of course, has a claim to get the next title shot after Kenno would maybe have beaten Kaito Kiyomiya. Otherwise, wouldn't really make sense for Fujita to claim a title match with Kaito defeating Kenno. So that's where I hesitate on saying that Noah will put the title on Kaito. I would say should.
I didn't say will. I said they should.
They should, yes, yes.
Yeah. Let me clarify on this. I didn't say will. I said they should.
But yeah, that's where the wrench could be thrown in, if you know what I mean.
And like, I said this when we were previewing the tournament. I pointed out that particular match with Fujita because before the tournament, Kenno was saying, the match I care about most, the one that's the biggest match for me, is Fujita. They said that in an interview. Like, so I was like, okay, Fujita's obviously beating Kenno. Yeah. And the way they set it up on the last show, like I figured that was going to happen. I thought that Fujita might go to the finals instead of Hideki, but I'm very thankful that they did what I wanted them to do, which was Hideki. But it was obvious to me Fujita would beat Kenno when you looked at the how they set all of that up. They could set up a title match. I also think here's a negative thing on Kaito winning. This would be, like, this title has been in flux all year. Mm. Like, whether it was, like I said, Nakajima losing right away, then Fujita had to give it up to COVID. He only had one defense. Go had no good defenses. Kojima had no good defenses. Not, like, good in match. He just didn't have any defenses.
No.
Like, or successful defenses. Like, Go had no successful defenses. Kojima had no successful defenses. And if Kenno loses, he will also have no successful defenses. So it's like, this title has been passed around way too much going in there. So whoever wins, I will say, whoever wins, I hope that they give them a long title reign to make up for how poorly the title's been booked this year, because I think that kind of devalues the title. And it was devalued anyway for most of the first half of the year. So that's not a great look, in my opinion. But, you know, what will they do? Like you said, they set up Fujita to have the title shot there. And you could very easily see him winning the title again.
Sure.
There. I don't. If they wrestled, I think Fujita would beat Kenno in a match.
Me too.
Like a title match. But, you know, maybe this is kind of their out. Like, to get away from that. Just have Kaito win the title, and then we move away from Fujita for a while as a main event guy.
Yes. That's, I guess, the outlook for the upcoming show on the 25th of September. And since we're already there, Dylan, let's talk about the other match that got a lot of interest when they announced it on the final of the N1. The semi-main of that show in Nagoya, I think the show is going to be, is Keiji Muto and Katsuyuki Fujita versus Masakatsu Funaki and Katsuhiko Nakajima. And you and I both talked about Katsuhiko Nakajima when he slapped Tetsuya Endo and he gave him a concussion and said, okay, yeah, that was a accident and we shouldn't really put pressure on Nakajima for this. And then what happened in the N1 match against Kinya Okada was that he once again KO'd a guy, and now the guy is also out, but with a broken jaw. So these are two instances where Katsuhiko Nakajima legit hurt a guy with being, well, too stiff, not safe, relentless, whatever it is. It's not a good look for Nakajima right now. And I personally took this match as a situation where Nakajima is not in this match because he is a star or anything. He is in with the vets because he fucked up and maybe they're going to teach him a lesson.
I think that's so silly, to be honest, to think, because they don't care about Okada. Like, why would they care about that? Like, you know, these guys are probably, like I said it even with Endo, some of these guys are probably impressed. Like, you know, that probably got him respect for some people in the locker room.
Maybe.
On there. But here's the thing. What is also silly, people, the narrative on Nakajima is insane. When you look at that Okada match, and I put this challenge to you and all of the listeners out there, because Noah actually reposted this on their account. They put a GIF up there. Mm-hmm. So I look at that. Look at the spot that he got injured on. And I looked at this a bunch of times in slow motion. I analyzed this deeply, and I will give you a brief repeat of that, what I did on the Patreon. What the spot was, okay, Okada, this is a spot that's been done a million times in wrestling. Okada shoves Nakajima to the ropes looking for an Okada roll. He bounces off, and Nakajima holds onto the ropes. Okay, we've seen that a million times in different ways. So yeah. If you look at the Okada roll, look at it very closely. When you see Okada do the Okada roll, when he performs the move, okay, he bounces him against the ropes. When he's supposed to roll back for the Okada roll, whatever, if you look at how they did it, Okada's hand grabs Nakajima's tights for a second too long. It wouldn't have even been a big deal if nothing had happened. But if you look at it, he grabs his tights for a second too long, and it messes up his roll. So if you look at the roll through backwards, so he's backwards, and Nakajima, the spot was, he's going to turn around and throw a kick at a seated Okada. But when he turns around, he's sitting kind of sideways, right? His legs are not straight forward, so he's out of position because the Okada roll got messed up. By the time he's slow rolled over, Nakajima's already ready to go and hit his spot, which is something they probably already planned out. And so he has to shift around real quick. And if you look at how Nakajima threw the kick, I'm going to try to describe this the best I can, because we've seen him do this move, and we've seen other people do this move many times. PK, right?
Yeah.
Very similar moves. Shibata, Zack Sabre does it as well. We've seen a ton of people, including him, do it. When you throw the PK, normally it's a vertical kick. Like, it lines up vertically. So you kick the guy in the right side of the chest, usually. You know, he'll throw a kick, big pop, you know, clap. Like, you know, big sound. If you look at how he threw the kick here, when he runs and throws the kick, he throws this kick horizontally and elevated to the head. So he's throwing it horizontally, and obviously it blasts him, and he gets the broken jaw, unfortunately. Mm. How he threw it makes me think, and like I said, I don't want to say this with 100% certainty, but considering he threw this kick differently than he throws his PKs that hit, this spot to me felt like he was going to do the Okada roll, Nakajima was going to throw the kick sideways, okay? And Okada was supposed to bounce, like, lean back to dodge it,
yeah,
and then he would likely pop up and throw forearms or a suplex or kicks of his own. So he wasn't able to dodge it because he was out of position because of the O'Connor roll that his hand, it was a very simple mistake, but his hand grabbed on Nakajima's tights too long and it messed up his timing and he couldn't dodge it in time, and that's why he threw the kick and hit him. Right away, Nakajima checked on him and stuff because it was an accident.
I was not going to put Nakajima in a situation where I saw a lot of people when the match happened right away. I also went back to the end of thing, but I went back to once again reiterate our point that these things tend to happen, but they happened twice in Nakajima matches now within a couple of months, which is a bad look, definitely. But I definitely, this is a great analysis that you just gave of the situation, and I could agree that it was much more of a screw up by Kenya Okada in this situation, but definitely the kick was very hard and he broke his jaw.
And he threw it for force because you would want it to look good. Like if you dodged it pretty much, but like he didn't dodge it, that's why it hurt him so much. But you know,
the announcement of the match is just a funny situation right now. I think in this situation, because it's not like Nakajima is anywhere near positioning wise like these other guys in the match.
Well, yeah, they haven't booked him as strong, but it's not like the thing is, everyone was talking about after Indo, again, what is the evidence that he was in the doghouse booking-wise after that match? If anything, it was worse with Fujita, before that match. Like I said, his booking has improved over the year since then, from where he was after that. And like I said, it was an accident, clearly. To me, the Indo one was so clearly an accident and put in the match that I couldn't even believe what I was reading. And this one, I think, if you just look at it, it looks really bad. But if you actually look at it, like I looked at it there, and I don't think you'll get, again, I don't know if that analysis is out there from anyone else, but if you really look at it, you can see that it wasn't, you can't put the fault on Nakajima. Blame is harsh, because it's like, oh, he messed up his spot slightly. That doesn't mean he deserves to have his jaw broken, right? It was just an accident, kind of. And like wrestling is dangerous, and that's what I always say. Like wrestling is dangerous. Even on, like I said, that Indo thing was on the simplest move, a slap. There's millions of those in wrestling, and this one just happened to be injured. It can be hurt on anything, but the booking of the match. Like I said, I just think like they're going to punish him for hurting Okada. I just that's very silly to me to think, in my opinion. It's like Okada, I like Okada. I've always liked Okada. He's very good, but they don't treat him with any kind of booking respect or anything like that. It's not like he's a star player or anything. Just Nakajima, like I said, his booking, he was, say what you want, he was there the final day.
Maybe it's also the complete opposite of what I'm saying. Maybe it's more of what you're saying, that he earned the respect of the vets, so he's getting the chance now. That could also be very true.
Or maybe it has nothing, maybe they just look at it like they should have, which is that it doesn't mean anything. it was just an accident, and this match is a match. With, they needed a spot for Nakajima, they needed a spot for a fourth guy, put him in there. I mean, it's not going to look good because he's very likely going to lose this match, I would say. But, and like I said, also, by the way, punishment, I mean, it's not like Muto is going to teach Nakajima a lesson in anything, that's not who you would put in if you're going to do it. This is wrestling justice, so to speak, there. So yeah, I'm not buying that at all. But like I said, hopefully there's no heat or respect from it, because it was just an accident. It really was. And this one wasn't even his fault at all, in my opinion. Like based on what I've seen, again, maybe it was. Like, maybe it's all wrong and he just did it, and it just happened. I don't know. But from what I saw and what I very strongly believe, it really wasn't even anything to point a finger at, if you actually break down the move.
Right. Yeah, so that is the situation there. And we could go through, Dylan, we could go through some of the matches in the tournament that we wanted to point out. We both already mentioned the Hideki Suzuki versus Kenno match, as it probably was my second favorite now that I'm thinking about it, after just behind the final.
I love that match too, but I think we should do something a little different here. We can bring the matches up, but I think we should go through the guys themselves.
Okay.
We can bring up their matches there, because I think everyone's kind of worth talking about in some way here. Not like super, super in-depth, but let's just talk about some of these guys' tournaments in general, what we thought of how they performed.
Yes, we could just go through the final group stage standings for Block A. Just start at the bottom. Anthony Green, Dylan.
You know, Green, he was a guy, you know, when I came in to the tournament, all the foreigners to me weren't exactly inspiring super confidence or happiness or excitement. But I have to say, I thought Green did pretty well for himself overall. He's still a junior wrestler, so you see situations like him versus Fujita. It was like
mention the match too. Yeah,
yeah, it was like a very short match. You know, overall they didn't really put any big thing into that. But I think overall in A block, you know, and this tournament was stacked overall, I would say, so he's going to be one of the bottom guys. But he didn't perform out of place to where it's like, oh, he went away or anything like that. He actually did pretty good in some matches. I thought the best match he had was versus Keno. I thought that was a really good match, actually. And like, it showed a lot of good, there was good psychology in it, like good selling from him. And I think of the two, like the one thing I will say about him, because I think everybody was pointing at him and Jack Morris in B block. Of the two, his moveset is more indie-ish. Mm-hmm. But I also think he's not as cartoonish as Jack in terms of expressions. You know, like the foreigner curse of Japanese wrestlers sometimes is like everyone has to go so over the top with their expression. We've seen it a million times with the New Japan guys. I don't think he is as bad as a lot of others in that. So I think he performed well. You know, it wasn't like he was blowing the roof off every week or anything like that, or every match, but I thought he did a good job.
He did a good job. I also like the Kenna match, but I would also punch to the Masato Tanaka match. I think he was highly motivated for that match. It was his first in the tournament, and I really liked that too.
Yeah, like I said, he did good. You know, it wasn't like it'll be anything super memorable, but he handled himself pretty well. It looks like he'll probably end up going down to the juniors after all of this again. But,
I guess so. That's mentioned at the Budokan show, that he wanted to go for the junior title.
And there's just no spot for him. The Tanaka match was okay. The problem is, like I said, that night one show was such a downer to me that I wasn't that into it. But that was not a bad match anyway. He settled himself all right. And I just after that, I was like, indie guys, like, great. But by the end of it, I thought, hey, this guy's actually not too bad. Like, I was kind of into him by the end.
Masaki Mochizuki, in my opinion, had not the greatest tournament. I don't know what it was with him. He had a good match with Goshi Ozaki, had a good match with Hideki Suzuki, but he was in some instances leaning more towards his heel role that he has in Dragon Gate for some matches, for example, against Wagner Jr., where he lost with this roll-up. It was okay for him, I think.
No respect shown to the open the Triangle Gates titles from Noah. That's what I didn't like. This is a champion right here. So he should have had a lot more effort put into his booking, in my opinion. But other than that, I thought he was solid overall. He wasn't a standout guy or anything like that, I would say. Probably, you know, just outside the top 10, I would say. You know, like, he was my 11th ranked guy in terms of my ratings that I did. But still good, like 3.25 for a Pure Star is a good rating. But he wasn't a standout player, let's just put it that way. But, you know, he was a solid vet. Yep. Which is that's probably where he is in general. Like, that should be his status. I didn't feel it was too crazy what they did. Maybe they could have given him an extra win or two, but he's not in the plans clearly for any future big match, and that's fine. My favorite match of his was the Tanaka match with him. I thought that he did a really good job.
Yeah, one of his two wins, I think. No?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he had two wins in the tournament. He had the 4 points, mm-hmm. but. You know, he had a really good run. I thought he beat Green and beat Tanaka. Yeah, you're totally right about that. But that was from night five. I thought that was a good match that he had.
Masato Tanaka is the next with 6 points. What do you think about his tournament? We actually mentioned two of his matches, so I guess pretty solid tournament.
He was the surprise of the tournament to me because normally I'm a little lower. I remember when he was DDT champion. I wasn't as super high on that run as a lot of people were, in my opinion. He's a legend, and I respect him, and he's a great worker. But I always think of him more as a great worker, like, 15, 20 years ago with Emblem and Zero One and all of that. Nowadays, I think of him as solid veteran hand, and some people really put him over big, and I wasn't that into him. But in this tournament, I thought he was one of the standout people. I thought he had a really great tournament. He was my number two ranked guy.
Wow.
In the tournament. Besides Hideki, I thought all of his matches were very strong. Even I thought he had a couple of guys' best matches, and I think he kind of has great success. Him and Hideki are like a great pairing. First of all, I love their match. Tanaka and Hideki, I thought was one of the, that was like my third favorite match in the tournament besides Hideki and Kenno and Hideki
Kaito. It was a great match.
Yeah, I thought that, and like I said, that first night was such a downer of a show. I really was so not into that.
And to your point of having some of the guys' best matches, I think you also had Wagner Jr.'s best match.
That was I agree.
The best match I've ever seen Elio Dr. Wagner Jr. have.
And that was what I was going to say. Like, that was kind of the point I was going to make. I loved their match, but they're like opposites and perfect to put in the same block. Hideki had a lot of people's best matches, but maybe his, like, he didn't have the greatest matches versus the lower guys like a Wagner. And Tanaka, his best matches were with Mochizuki Dr. Wagner. Their best matches were Tanaka, and they didn't really stand out against the others as much. So it's like Tanaka got the best out of someone like Dr. Wagner Jr. So it's like he got the best out of him, and I agree with you. That was one of his best matches. That was a recommended match, so you got to love it. I thought Tanaka had a great run in the tournament. I was very surprised, actually, because I wasn't expecting him to be a standout player at all. I was expecting him to be a mid-tier, like, good, solid veteran guy, which is what I always see of him as. But here, I thought he had a great tournament overall. That match with Hideki was one of the best of the whole tournament, in my opinion.
Yeah, we also already talked about Elio and Dr. Wagner Jr., best match with Tanaka, except for that. His matches, I've said it on the last show that we had, this guy is... He has few things to grab onto. He is just a dude wrestling, doing very basic moves. Nothing spectacular.
If you were going to point, like, and he wasn't bad per se, but if you're going to point to a weak link of this tournament, which is very high quality, it would be him to me. Like, he was the lower end guy of the tournament, and the match with Tanaka was good, but he had a lot of people's worst matches in the block as well. I would say, you know, guys like Hideki was hitting with everybody. I didn't really like their match that much. You know, Mochizuki, I didn't like that match. Kenno, Fujita, all of their matches weren't that good overall. So again, it's not like he was bad, but he was on the level of like below like low tier New Japan foreigner guy. You could Chase Owens or something, you know, like that was kind of his level. I had him at 2.73 on the Pure Stars, which is, you know, again, it's not bad, it's solid, but he's not somebody that, again, if you're going to point to a weak link, it's him. And in my opinion, he's a better as a tag team guy.
Be in a tag team, yeah.
Yeah, like it's there's no reason to do anything more with him as a singles guy. And if anything, he's probably the one you might want to look at changing out next year.
Yes. Who definitely is a singles guy and who definitely had some very good matches is Goshi Ozaki, Dylan.
Yeah, and he's a guy I know a lot of people pegged him to win the tournament. By the way, I have to take a moment to brag on myself, and I've never wanted to put myself over too much, Drea, but in this case, I will have to call a win in our pick'ems. Me and Dr. Jonathan, I correctly predicted Kaito, and much like in the G1, I've remained victorious once again. Although he did pick Kento to win the Royal Road tournament, so I give him his props for that. But I have to take that win there. But a lot of people I know, not just him, were really looking at Go to win the tournament. And I was just thinking, it doesn't feel like the right time at all. Like going into the tournament. But he wasn't booked like a guy that was set to win the tournament either. He didn't really stand out in terms of points, so to speak. You know, like you said, he's not even in the top three of the block. So that's very interesting how that played out. But wrestling wise, he was very good. I would say, like, I mean, and what do you expect? He's a tremendous performer.
Yeah, you mentioned the match against Kenno. That was probably his best. But I also got to say, I really liked the match with Fujita that he had. The match with Hideki was very good. Tanaka,
Hideki was his best in my book.
Yeah, you could make a case for either of these matches. I think that he performed on a very high level.
I just thought that Kenno match wasn't as great as it could have been, to be honest. It was still like a recommended match. It was still good, but with those two, you have high expectations. You know, like a true banger, and I don't think it ever hit that heights. I thought the Hideki match was better, but still, Go had a lot of good matches with everybody. You know, and it was like, you knew he wasn't going to have anybody's worst match either, so he was really a good person to have in this block. You know, again, a great run for him. I thought he had a great tournament overall. Like, the thing is, there were a lot of guys that had great tournaments. So I don't know. He was like my number six rated guy in terms of just matches. But he was always a great head to have. You put him in main events. He did a lot of good things. And I was happy to see him. It was good stuff.
Yes. Katsuyuki Fujita.
Yeah, you know, he had a solid tournament. I think not super spectacular. I really liked the match versus Hideki. That was like one of the most controversial matches of the tournament, because I saw people like, this is the most boring match ever.
Really? Like, no, I thought it was good.
I thought it was good too.
I'm seeing the ratings right now. There is everything between 4 and 10. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Some people are like, this is the most boring crap I've ever seen in my life. And I didn't really think it was like that at all. I thought they did a good job, especially near the end. I think that you're not going to get the high end of like excitement level, like high speed or even like ferocious striking per se until the end. I thought they got there, but for a lot of it, it was maybe not as fast paced, but I still thought it was well done overall. It was a good match. And I liked it. I like that in Noah, you get this kind of scenario where this style of match can happen. So I really appreciated it for that, because you're not going to see this kind of match in New Japan or even All Japan, really. So I like that part. You know, he had some good matches. He had some lackluster ones. You know, he wasn't the best when it came to, like, obviously the Green match was very short and everything. The Wagner match, it wasn't that great. But when he faced the big guys, he did pretty good. I didn't like that Kenno match. I don't know about you, because that was, like, one of the last matches. But, him kicking him in the nuts or whatever at the end was just, like...
That was such a weird match. Like, he kicked him in the nuts three times.
Not even because of Fujita, but just, yeah.
I was completely buying that they would disqualify Kenno. But, yeah, I don't know what that was all about.
Yeah, exactly. Very weird match. I didn't like that at all. So it just felt like somebody, it felt like they had to come up with a finish to protect everybody, and they did it in the most weird way possible. Fine tournament. I wouldn't say he was high-end overall. I'm very glad Hideki was in the finals instead of him, but I enjoy him for the most part, in the tournament. I thought he had some good matches.
Yes, so that brings us then to who else is left? Kenno is left.
I thought he did a good job as champion. He was right up there. I had him like very slightly behind Go in my ratings in terms of the match. But he had a lot of good matches. I thought the match with Green was Green's best match, in my opinion. I really enjoyed that Kenno and Green match. And I thought he did a great job. The Hideki match was probably the best match of the tournament until the final. And he did a phenomenal job in that match. And I love the way, like... And I kind of did a similar thing. I love Hideki in general, because I think everyone will point to... Unfortunately, they love him in with Fujita and these other guys. Mm. But if you actually look at his matches... Okay, so maybe he did a draw or whatever. But if you look at his matches, he makes the other guy look a lot better coming out of it. And not worse. So, like, in that Kenno match, it was a draw. But Kenno ended up beating Hideki in his own game and had him in a sleeper to almost choke him out at the end.
And that's what I was going to say about Kenno too. I think he carried himself like a proper champion and represented the company very good in this, very well in this tournament.
I agree with that, overall. Like I said, the last match was what it was, but I think overall he did a great job. And the champion is always like the hardest job to have during a tournament like this, because you are the top guy, but also... Nobody thinks you're going to win the tournament because you're the champion. It wouldn't make a lot of sense. So you have one of the hardest jobs of the entire tournament, and I thought he performed very admirably and definitely a top half performer of the tournament.
That concludes Block A, because basically we've already talked about Hideki Suzuki.
Yes, he's great. The MVP of the tournament.
Yes. So watch all of his matches. So going to Block B, we got at the bottom of the table what could be expected, Kenny Okada. Came in late, but even if he hadn't come in late, he would have lost all of his matches, I think. So he ended up with 0 points. There is a case to be made that maybe he would have beaten Katsuyuki Nakajima at the final day, but I don't think that would have happened. So Kenny Okada, what do you think?
Yeah, he's like, they don't care about him. He's a warm body. somebody had to get injured for him to bring in there, and he's going to lose all his matches, and that's what he did. And he was good in all of them. He was a fine performer. It's not like he was put in position to have like a standout match or anything like that.
No. So he wasn't even put in position to have this underdog babyface fire performances that he even got close to scoring a win. And that is the thing. I think this guy is a perfect example of that. In other companies, they tend to have match formulas where the underdogs get these near three counts that they can feed off, the crowd can feed off. But with the heavyweight style in Noah, these close three counts, these near falls, they just don't happen a lot. And with that, it's really hard for a guy like Kenya Okada to gain any momentum in the situation and the position he's in.
Yeah, I agree with that. The one match I think tried to put him in a good spotlight was against Kaito, where he really took a lot of that match. He wasn't even like necessarily working as an underdog. He was really in control of a lot of that match there. And Kaito was very unselfish in that match, which, as you expect, Kaito rules. Like, everybody knows this. But that was Okada's best match to me, was against Kaito. If you're going to watch one to stand out, it was that one. Like you said, the other ones, it was like short matches, always on the undercards, not really getting a chance to show a lot. But he was good in his role. He's a good worker. It's just hard to see any kind of future for him right now. Yeah. It, like I said, it really feels like, hey, like we just needed somebody to replace Thatcher. So here, and we didn't want Inamura in the tournament because we don't want him losing all of his matches. So here we go. Here's Okada.
I saw that Noah is going to debut a new wrestler by the name of Daiji Osawa. He is the first guy that debuts after Yasuo Takayano years ago, right?
Yeah, it looks like this guy might be a little bit bigger than Yano.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's like the dojo hasn't been very effective in recent years.
Hey, in recent years? more like ever. Yeah, maybe like 20 years ago when they started. I mean, look, remember that year where Kumano was the only guy they had? I mean, that's what I'm saying. This dojo has not gotten a lot of takers for whatever reason. A lot of people said, like, early on, like, oh, Kenta, Marufuji, maybe they were a little rough with the trainees, and a lot of people retired early. They had the Kinsuke office guys there. You know, they had a lot of great talented dudes there, like Ota, Okito. Like, those guys are really great, I thought. Yeah, the dojo's not super successful right now, but any new guy is good, going in there. Like, that's the one good thing. It's like any new person is an automatic win. And it looks like this guy will be a heavyweight prospect, which I think will help.
That's good. That's good. Being a heavyweight, is much more of a chance than being in the juniors. Masaki Tamiya, he defeated... who did he defeat, actually, in the tournament? Let me see. He got 6 points.
While you look that up, I'll just say that they actually do try with the juniors. They're just really incompetent. is the problem. Like, that, what other company would give an all-junior Sumo Hall show to? It's just, it was really poorly done.
Yeah, so, it was poorly done. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That nobody ends up caring about anything they do because it's really poorly booked. And the same guy's championed for a million years. And the same group has all the titles for a million years. And nobody cares about it anymore. And they don't know what they're doing. So I do think they at least try with the juniors. I just think that they're very... Like, New Japan, to me, doesn't put effort into their juniors. No one puts effort. They're just incompetent.
The two other victories, except for Kenya Okada, for Kitamiya, we were against Masa Katsufunaki, of course, and against Kaito Kiyomiya. So two signature wins for Masa Kitamiya that is going to take him into position where he's going to challenge Masa Katsufunaki for the national title. And I really, really liked Masa Kitamiya's tournament. I thought that he showed a lot of fire, and it really showed that they have a role for him now, at least for this month, where he's going to challenge for the national title, which is much more than he's getting usually. And they rekindled his feud with Nakajima in some ways too. So they are once again trying to push him a bit more. And I think it shows with his confidence that he's getting this push right now.
I thought he had a great tournament. I was really impressed with what he put together. He was I actually had him number 4 overall. I had him ahead of Nakajima. Even in the rankings, I thought he had a really.
I can see that.
I thought he had a really strong tournament, and I was really impressed. Top 5 player, the thing is, he is ultimately, even in the tournament, yeah, he got the win or whatever, but the one with Kaito was about setting Kaito up for a resurgence, and this other one was to set up a title shot, which I think he's going to lose personally, but maybe, you know, maybe he'll win. He should win, in my opinion, although we'll talk about Funaki in a little bit, who I also love a lot, but I just think, to me, he's in his role as a utility guy. But he's probably among the best utility players.
Yeah, absolutely agreed.
You know, like, he's among the best in his role in Japan, and he could be a lot more. If they decide to say, and who knows, maybe, like, look, maybe we end this month, Kaito's the champ. I think that if they're going to do that, if it were me and I ran this company, I'd switch all the titles. Like, the junior national, like, junior guys have been held by the same guys. They're not interesting. Nobody cares about them. It's time. No offense to Christian Madre, who's a great worker, but Stinger is not the answer to any. You know, there's no question where they are the answer to in this division. and it's time to get rid of all that. All new guys. I put new faces on all of them. Like, new era. Masa Kitamiya, national champion. Kaito, world champion. All new guys as everything. And, like, look. Because, like, look, what they've been doing with the veterans hasn't worked. We're talking about this tournament right now. Look at some of these attendances. They're not good. That, like, it's time to roll the dice on something different, I think. It's been time for a long time, actually. And it may be too late, in all honesty. But the final at least gives me some hope that maybe it's not. And I think Kitamiya should win the national title. But, you know, I don't know if he will or not. But I think he's probably going to lose. Because it's hard to imagine him more than what he is, because he's been what he is for so long, you know? Like, you know, because he's been in the same role for all of these years. But the talent level is so high that you want him to be more. And you still want him to be more, even after all these years.
Let's give him this. That would be, actually would be great. I would love that. But I agree. I can't see that as well. I think this is this kind of situations where the guy wins in a tournament and then eventually loses to the champion. But maybe they'll surprise us.
And he deserves it. I see it just because Funaki's reign's gone on for a good while, more than the world titles, so like more than like four or five champions, like world champions, he's had the title for. So if they want to change it, now would be a fine time. But like I said, it's just hard to imagine Kitamiya as more than where he is because he's been where he is so long. So, but if he loses, if he's just a utility guy, he's the best. You know, he's probably the best at his position in Japan. So I was really impressed with his tournament. He deserves a lot of credit. Great worker, Kitamiya.
Jack Morris, the guy that we said it in our preview actually, that got a lot of criticism when he was announced for the tournament, but only because nobody knew him. And so he came into the tournament and did one of the tropes that always happens in these tournaments. He, as a foreigner coming in new, right away beat one of the favorites of the tournament in Kaito Kiyomiya, and then went on to have a decent run, I would say, for a guy coming into the situation. Showed some effort in his matches that he had. So I came away thinking that he was a fine choice for this, and other than, for example, Elio de Dr. Wagner Jr., I wouldn't say that he underperformed. I think he did a good job.
I really got to praise this guy. If you look out, like, I saw him do interviews with like five or six different websites overall at the end of the tournament. Like, so he was really, he took this seriously. Like, this is like his big chance. And he proved it. And like you said, I thought he put in a lot of effort. And not just the interviews, but also in the tournament. I think maybe too much effort. Like I said, some of those facial expressions and the acting was like Will Ospreay level. Like, to me, we were heading towards that. But his actual wrestling was actually pretty good. I liked what I saw of him. Like, it's one of those things where it's like that overacting stuff really turns me off of a lot of matches. So like half the time in the tournament, I was like, I don't know if I like this guy or not. Like, you know, it's like, do I like him or do I hate him like all the other foreigners? But by the end of it, I thought he did a good job. I actually had him. I also think B Block, you know, had a lot of more, like, you know, like we said with Kitamiya, guys willing to work with the lower end guys, utility type of dudes. So I think he got more of a spotlight and a chance to shine throughout the tournament. But I thought he took it pretty well. Not a standout player overall to the level of Hideki or whatever, But for his role, I thought he did a well enough job. And even through his own force of will and how he laid out his matches, he was able to set up his own storyline throughout the tournament. Because in every match, he would go to the top rope, and it would get stopped. He was about to do his big move. And then at the final match, he hit the shooting star press at the end.
That was one of those situations. An ugly shooting star press that nearly... I would say it was so close to injuring himself very seriously. Wow. But he got a spot in, yes.
Yeah, the injury, whatever. Like, but it just didn't look good, more importantly. Like, he's fine, obviously, now. It's just I wish that he'd hit it cleanly. And it would have been a lot better off. Definitely something maybe to get rid of the moveset. Drop that from the moveset, I would say. But as a wrestler, I liked what he saw, and I think he definitely impressed a lot of people. Like I said, him getting himself out there and getting his personality out there and him as a person really helped a lot, because I think that endeared him to a lot of the English-speaking fans through all of these sources, and I think he did a wonderful job of that. So big props to Jack Morris. Truly sublime every time.
Sublime every time. You could also apply that to the slickness of Masakatsu Funaki, Dylan. How about that for a transition?
He had some sublime performances, maybe not every time going in there, but you know, it's just one of those things. You gotta put yourself over, though, okay? Whatever you do, you gotta put yourself over. Funaki, I liked his wrestling in the tournament. I was a fan of his. I thought he was up there again, maybe not top five level, but top 10 level. You know, I had him in between. Like, he was slightly ahead of Sugiura and slightly below Kojima, pretty much.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yes,
I really liked his match versus Nakajima. I thought that was his. I thought that was Nakajima's best match.
That's also what the cage match inmates have as his best match, and I agree with that as well. Thought it was a great match.
And again, like I said, I think Night 2 benefited from such a lame Night 1 show to where all of the last few matches really popped big for me. And that was one of them. That was the main event. You know, he's national champion. He wasn't there to win the tournament, obviously, but he was able. I thought the match versus Kaito was the one that really was kind of lackluster in the main event. I don't think they gelled together as well as they could have overall. I think that there was some issues there. It was still a fine match, don't get me wrong, but in a main event between these two guys, you expect a really great match. And it was like, hey, this is solid. Like, it wasn't even that good. Like, it was like, this is cool and all, but not anything special. So I think that was the one match where he didn't really perform up to his level. But everything else, he was good, and the Nakajima match was great. So I liked his tournament overall. Good player.
Yes, good player in this tournament. You mentioned Takashi Sugiura already, killing machine. I thought a decent run here in the tournament. You mentioned him slightly below Funaki. So, yeah, for him to be put in the situation where he got 8 points, I think his wrestling, his effort level probably matched that, because I think we've seen him in much better situations. He was still good, but not as outstanding as he used to be.
Yeah, I thought he had the thing is, again, your expectations for him are very high. At least mine were very high. So you have to consider this a disappointing run at the end of the day. It sickens me to say this. I'm such a wonderful performer. And when it was time, when he was on, he still showed some great stuff. I thought his match versus Kita Miya was really good. And the finishing stretch was so awesome. Mm-hmm. How he countered, and it played off of what happened earlier in the year with the prison lock, and he looked for the headbutt, but no, Sugiura countered. It was like a great all action, like 10 minute, you know, badass Sugiura match that I wanted. But then there were some matches, again, like the Kojima match was the most notable example, where it's like, this didn't get close to what I expected.
No, this didn't work out.
Yeah, and there were some matches like that, but by the end, I thought he ended up bringing it together to where he had a good tournament overall. Again, you want more out of him, but for what he had to, you know, for what he had to work with at the start, which I didn't think he was that great on, by the end of it, I thought he pulled it together pretty well. He gave us the Sugiura that we all know and love so much, or hopefully we love. And I thought he did a great job in a couple of matches, but yeah, overall as a tournament, it wasn't as great as it could have been. I put him a little bit below Funaki. And it's funny, at the end, they gave Funaki that like 1 minute win on him. You know, I wonder if there was some kind of injury deal going on.
I just took it as one of those instances where they show you that a finish can come in any situation. Yeah. And that is when we talk about the overarching things in this tournament, this is where I think that the N1 victory is superior to the G1 climax, because there were so many different finishes in this tournament and so few patterned finishes that in comparison we've seen in New Japan Pro Wrestling, where I just thought that this was a great situation to display that you can't really predict how long the matches are going to go. And you also had these very short matches with Fujita and Green, for example. You had sub 5 minute matches, you had over 20 minute matches. There was a lot of range in this tournament in different aspects of the game.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. That was a point made on Twitter to me, where it was like a lot of guys had different ways to win. Shout out to McDuncan on Twitter. Very cool stuff there. But he mentioned that as well, with everybody, like, you know, if you're just tuning in, maybe this is your first N1, you're seeing that it's a little bit different than the G1 or New Japan, where a lot of things were patterned. Unless you're like Tanahashi, where you have a lot of different finishes.
I would imagine it is very hard to adjust to the pace and to the finishes of Pro Wrestling Noah, because they just don't do the high-octane finishing stretches like they do in New Japan. And I guess it takes some time to really get into the groove.
But I also think it can be good. Like I said, I think that's a good thing that it's different, actually, I think that they have more complete matches than Noah in general, and you have different things, and it's not so patterned and obvious. So I prefer Noah's style in general to New Japan's in general. I haven't always loved everything they've done booking-wise, but just in terms of wrestling, I think the roster is so strong, and it led to what the tournament became. But Sugera, I also liked his match versus the Kaito as well. I thought that was a really strong performance to get Kaito over the hump. So good stuff from Sugera in the big matches, not always great in the others.
Connection is there with Sugiura, because Satoshi Kojima, in my opinion, also had one of his best matches with Kaito Kumiya. His tournament was really backloaded with the matches against Funaki, Nakajima, and Kiyomiya that I all liked. Except for that, I thought the matches early in the tournament were decent. So, yeah. I still don't really see the value that Kojima is supposed to have for Noah. I saw that fans had signs, so maybe he's bringing in some newer fans to Pro Wrestling Noah that are fans of his specifically, but I don't really get the vibe of him in Noah right now.
I totally agree with all that. I thought the Nakajima match was really good overall at Nagoya. That was one of the longest matches of the tournament, but I thought they were able to pull it off really well overall. But he's a guy, again, not a Noah guy. I think that they kind of undervalue the value of being a Noah guy and the value of not being a Noah guy. So I think that they don't really appreciate that as much as they should, at least in situations like this. As I said, his work... I think he's better than Nagata in All Japan. I would definitely say that.
Yeah, he is.
But that's not saying.
He had more of a worth to this tournament than Nagata had in the Royal Road tournament.
Yes, I definitely agree with that. But overall, again, he was like my, you know, like just sliding into the top half. A good tournament, you know. Definitely for his age and where he's at, that's good. But like you said, it's not like – I don't think he should be a top star main event player, you know, overall. He's much better as a mid-card type of guy. Maybe a tag team guy, which is what they might be setting up.
Maybe.
And I think that's best for everybody, actually. Like Kojima and Sugera as a tag team, I think that's probably what we should do for a little while with those guys. I think Kojima is not a main event level player anymore. Even if he does bring in some new talent, just not enough to be up there. But a good worker. I enjoyed his tournament for the most part. I thought it was like slightly better than Sugiura's and slightly better than Funaki's. I had him just ahead of Funaki. All those guys were kind of in that same jumble where if you want to say one's better than the other, I'm not going to fight you over it. But he's they're all kind of that same mid-tier range in the tournament with some high-end guys ahead of them.
And this then brings us to Katsui Kunakajima, Dylan.
Yeah, Nakajima, he was a top five guy for me. I had him just below... I had him just ahead of Go and just below Kitamiya. in my ratings. So top five, dude, number five. Good tournament. Obviously, it ended terribly with Okada. That was terrible. That sucked. But as a wrestler, I thought he did a really good job. I thought that Funaki match was really great. And he had some big, you know, I thought the Kojima matches, those were all main events. It says something about him and where they are at as a company. They gave him a vote of confidence in this tournament. If you notice, a lot of his matches were at the main event level. No matter who he was facing, even against like Funaki, who's the mid card dude in Noah. So it's like you're putting him in a lot of main events. He was still alive on the final day. He was much stronger than I thought he would be, actually. Overall,
me too. Yeah, I didn't have him at number two when I was thinking about the blocks in the end.
Yeah, but he's a former champion. I mean, his reign ended just terribly against Fujita. But this company was kind of built around his run for a half year, pretty much, like him winning in one last year and then winning the title and everything. So they booked it around him for a while. I think he's still got a lot of respect for that, and he's won this tournament. He was like in the final of this tournament, I heard somebody say, for like 4 or 5 years in a row, dating back to the Global League, whether winning or losing. So, like, and he's definitely won the last 2 years. So it shows you that they see great value in him, and I thought he did a great job with it. I thought he had a really strong tournament. It's unfortunate the end is what, like, that's going to overshadow everything. But the wrestling was very good throughout the entire tournament. And he has a way of, like, his charisma is such that he stands out always. Like, you know, he carries himself in a way that's different from virtually anyone else on the roster. And that allows him to stand out with his great charisma, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I think we already talked about Kaito Kiyomiya. We mentioned him a couple of times, actually, in some of the guy's best matches. Yep. So I would expect that in your ratings that Kaito Kiyomiya is very high up there. He was positioned to have the regular pattern run that the champion of a tournament would have, with two early losses coming back from behind. I've said it before here on the show. And he did a great job with it. And just can reiterate what I said with the Muto moves and Muto finishing moves. I don't like that, but except for that, he's a great guy.
Yeah, love the talent. He was my number three in the tournament, just behind Tanaka and Hideki. I thought he was the B-block MVP and had a great final and totally proved his worth. And like you said, there's evidence that his overness continues to be strong to the Noah fan base. And I think that he's a guy that they should...
He's their guy.
He should be. He should have always been their guy. He never should have done what they've done with him. But we're here now. I still don't love the presentation, just what I said earlier. But as a wrestler, he is always... To me, he's among the best wrestlers in Japan. He would be a top 10 guy in me, and maybe even a little higher. Especially in terms of an heavyweight ace style guy, I think that he is up there. So, like, for example, compare him to someone like Miyahara in All Japan. I think Kaito is a better wrestler than him. Kento has something he doesn't in terms of like main event charisma and how he carries himself and how he's been booked, like a geek, unlike Kaito. But I think as a wrestler, he's a better pure wrestler than Kento.
I agree with that. Where Kento is better at is having a match pattern for him.
That's true.
There is better at, but except for that, I also agree that he's a better pro wrestler.
You can argue that with Okada as well.
Sure, yeah.
In New Japan. Like, great comparison, yeah. I think Kaito is a better pure wrestler than him, but Okada, like you said, he has... And those guys have something that he doesn't quite have yet, in my opinion, but I also think a lot of that is due to stuff that's out of his control more than anything wrong with him per se, but hopefully they can get that going. We'll see what happens. Again, like, I hope that this title match does a great number. I hope that we're on a good path and they can get things back, because remember last year with Nakajima, it felt like everything was going up right for Noah. They had a lot of momentum heading into the new year. They had that show. Hey, this is something I wanted to ask you about. It's something I haven't really seen talked about this year, obviously, with Wrestle Kingdom only being one show. Do you think Noah will have any kind of influence on that, or like a match?
I think the Great Muta will be on.
Yeah, I can see that. I wanted him to have a match.
I think Japan
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, go on.
No, I was just saying, I think they would want Muto to have a match. They would consider that a draw on its own to have him in there. They wouldn't put him at a Wrestle Kingdom. But Wrestle Kingdom, maybe they need all the help they can get to fill that dome. So I don't know. You may be right on that.
That's the thing. I don't think there is any room on this one-day Wrestle Kingdom because New Japan would want to work with AEW on that show.
Yeah, that's something that's been heavily speculated about. I know that they just did. There was some kind of announcement for foreigners coming in, but it doesn't look like that's going to be a problem. To get AEW guys on in New Japan at this point. So yeah, I think they would want to work with them, but
I can see. I don't know if Noah announced anything for early next year already. They have not. I can see them once again running Budokan on January 1st. So that would make their own show more special, I would think.
I think that went without saying.
Yeah.
I don't think it would be a very surprising thing if they didn't do that. But like you said, I don't know if anything's been announced. But like, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, to me, they should have just announced, hey, whoever wins the N1 and gets the title shot at the Budokan.
Right.
Like, instead of doing it how they've done it, which I think it opens up some cans of worms that, you know, like that we're going to have to navigate around.
We talked about the issues that we
have. Yeah, exactly.
They have to make some very cruel decisions right now.
Exactly. I think if they just said, hey, you get it at the Budokan, then I think we'd avoid all of those issues. So hopefully they get around to that. And I think I've always believed, dating back all the way to the Royal Rumble at WrestleMania, it's good to have a match that locks in your main event of your biggest show a while out and build anticipation towards it the whole time. And I wish that they had done it, but they didn't do it. Hopefully everything works out. But yeah, I think Budokan will be there. But I was just wondering about that because I haven't seen anybody talk about that because it was only one Wrestle Kingdom show. It depends on what kind of show they want to have at the end of the day. I mean, they're probably going to have, it's probably going to be 10, 12 matches on the show. So I think that there would be room if they wanted to.
They wanted to. But just considering that they actually never followed up on anything that they did on the Yokohama show this year, I wouldn't expect it.
I agree. I just thought it was something interesting. Because it shows you how much things can change.
Yeah.
And even that happening was a huge surprise, like them doing a show together. Nobody expected that when they announced it. But now it's like, you know, it came and it went and it didn't, you know, it didn't really lead to anything, unfortunately. Kojima's here and Noah, so you can't say it didn't lead to anything. I mean, he's here, we'll see if Noah has anything. I think that's at least something to put in the back of your mind. And if it happens, I'll brag about it that I brought it up. But if it doesn't, we'll pretend I never said it. So it's okay. But
it's on audio now. You can't just do that.
Now, let's be honest. We'll all forget about this meaningless Noah.
Yes.
No. For real, though, I think it would be interesting if they wanted to do that or not. Even if they did a show, it's not like it would be a main event match. It would be like, hey, we're doing this GHC title match on your fifth match, you know, whatever, a 10 match card. So that would be kind of the best they could hope for, I would say. But Noah, N1, it was a great tournament. Overall.
It was a great tournament, yes.
I asked a lot of people online about it on Twitter. Okay. They all responded. A lot of people responded. They were all like, pretty much all the rankings were like 8. You know, I asked like graded on a 1 of 10, who was the MVP? And pretty much all of them are like 7. 7 was low. MVP Hideki, best match Hideki Kaito. Keno Hideki, best bout. Hideki MVP. Keno Hideki, best match. MVP Hideki. Kaito Hideki, best match. Hideki MVP. So like everybody thinks that Hideki's the MVP, and it was a really good tournament. 8 to, 7 low end, 9 high end, 8 probably would be where I would give it, and I think most people would probably ride with that. So it was a really strong tournament. I thought much more enjoyable than the G1 in general.
I was just going to ask, how would you rank the G1 from just cage match ratings?
G1? The thing is, I liked the matches well enough, but it was so uninteresting to follow. It would have to be like a 6.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too. So I would give the N1 a 7 out of 10.
Okay, I give it an 8.
I thought it was a good tournament. What it lacked probably was that one really standout signature match that everybody could point to. I mean, the Hideki and Keno match was great, and the final was great as well.
I think he had two of them.
Yes. I really thought that those were great matches. However, I wouldn't say that these are great standout matches. I wouldn't go that far with these matches. But the G1 didn't really have those. Well, it had, but overall it was not that interesting of a tournament.
What was the best match of the G1?
Probably for me. What did I have as this match? Let me think.
this is troubling. This was like a couple of weeks ago.
I think I had Finlay and Ospreay. Did I have that? Or Finlay and Juice? I think it was... What was it?
Yeah, Finlay and Ospreay. I mean, that was a good match, but...
I can't quite remember what my favorite one...
So it wasn't that great, is what you're saying.
Whatever it was. That's what I'm saying.
I'm
putting the G1 below the N1. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not arguing with you. I was just asking you. But it's like if you can't remember it, it clearly wasn't that important.
I can remember some of the great matches, but I can't tell you right off the bat what my favorite match was.
Okay, I like the Goto and Tanahashi match. That was my favorite one. That's the one. My point though is,
to me, there was not that one standout match in the N1, and at the bottom with Wagner, for example, there was some. Lackluster matches, but not as lackluster as, for example, like Bad Luck Fale or Toru Yano matches. So, yeah, this tournament was overall better than the G1 Climax.
Yeah, like to me, Wagner's way better than the lower tier guys in the G1. Like I said, it's not great. He's like Yujiro, like Chase type of guy. Like,
to me, just in a lot of situations, just also the atmosphere was just not there for a lot of N1 matches.
I think that is a legitimate criticism to make, because like I said, these shows were not like the tour was not good overall, like attendance wise and atmosphere wise as well was not good until the final show at the end of the day. And even then, like that show dragged on and on and on until the final. But the fans, they came around and it was good at the final. But yeah, I totally agree with that the atmosphere was not good at all in the tournament. I would definitely say you have to be a true wrestling fan, I think, to appreciate a lot of these matches. But I do think the ending, the Hideki matches, I would say are both great matches. Like up there, the final, I think, would probably be the one I would choose just because of the emotional factor and all that. But that would be up there. Like, that to me is a match of the year level match, like in my opinion. Like one that I'll remember by the end of the year. Maybe. Who knows? Maybe we'll talk about
there
the
we go.
I don't know. So, like, you know, then I will look very silly if that happens. But that's okay. Like, looking silly, there's nothing wrong with that in the world of professional wrestling.
That is absolutely 100% correct, because lots of these takes that we have in the end look silly. And Dylan,
accurate predictor. Do not disrespect me with my accurate predictions.
We can't take the same approach for the 5-star Grand Prix right now, because otherwise we'll still be sitting here tomorrow. And the thing about it is, Dylan, pulling back the curtain, we're recording this on the Sunday of All Out, and I am preparing to watch the show live. So I got to take some rest, Dylan, eventually. So we got to take a different approach, because with the 5-star Grand Prix, we have 16 wrestlers. I don't know.
Well, like I said, the tournament's not over yet.
The tournament is not over yet, so we can't talk about everybody's tournament. What we can talk about, though, Dylan, is the standings up until Sunday, September 4. What we can say right now, Dylan, is we got two tables for the Red Stars and for the Blue Stars block. In the Blue Stars block, we got Hazuki in front with 14 points. She has two matches left, I think, with two losses that she suffered. Then Saya Kamitani is right behind her. She has more matches left in comparison to Hazuki. She has five matches left, if I'm correct here, with one loss that she took. And then we got three wrestlers with 10 points. That's Julia, Mirai, and Ami Sorei. I think that is a surprise that she is so far high up in this tournament. But she only has one match left, so it's going to drop off. I guess Mirai has one left as well, and Julia has three left. So for Blue Stars, Dylan, what do you expect? Who is moving on?
Julia's going to win the block.
Yeah, I guess so too. Julio, she is she faces on the last 3 days of this tournament, she faces Momo Watanabe, Saya Kamitani, and Zuzu Suzuki. So that is very likely that she's moving on for Blue Stars. Except for that, for this block, Dylan. Of course, when we agreed to do this show, the first thing that you did was claim that I was a Mirai hater, but I never was. And then I thought about, I usually am not a hater of any of these wrestlers that are that are in consideration by the online hatred. So I like Mirai. I always liked her. I liked her when she was in TJPW already. So I thought that, that the run that she had was, that she's on was, is very good. But except for that, Blue Stars, Dylan, what do you have? What are the best matches that we should check out?
Yeah, I was just playing around with the Mirai stuff. Like all Mirai haters, like I said, the haters have gone mysteriously silent during this tournament.
I don't know why that is.
Yeah, that's what I always said. I said people now, like the same ones that talked bad about her are going to be the ones that say, I always loved Mirai. But remember, if you listen to the show, you know who the real OG was on there, which makes me exempt from ever going into the mud. It's like playing Monopoly and having a whole deck of get out of jail free cards on my side right now with this Mirai. So I have bought Boardwalk and gotten Mirai on my Monopoly game. But these two Blue Stars had the best matches to me. The two best matches of the whole tournament were from them. And the two I would point to were Mirai versus Suzu Suzuki from Night 5. One of the absolute best matches all year and will be excellent a strong match of the year candidate. One of the best finishing sequences of the entire year, too. Getting into the, like, how they did it with Mirai was so good. Like, I thought it was so creative and cool. And just an excellent, excellent performance. Like that to me is my top favorite match of the tournament. I absolutely loved it. And Suzu has been a great addition, which everybody knew that already, pretty much, that Suzu was awesome. I don't need to tell you that. You already know. But she was great in the tournament as well. But I loved that match a lot. The other one you can point
to. In general, going into that same show in general, I also really liked the Hazuki versus Natsupoi match on the same card. That was very good in my opinion as well.
That whole show was a great card because that was the big show at Corken Hall. They've done two shows this tour, in fact, that have sold out Corken Hall, had 1,500 fans or more in them, and that was the first one. I mean, that came out of nowhere. I don't think anybody expected it. Then they did it again, like later on in the tour. Night 5, that was the night you need to check out. That was the best match. All of the last five matches were great, actually.
Yes.
You know, Azumi and Tom Nakano, that was a wonderful match. Momo Starlight Kid, that was a really good match as well. Hazuki Natsupoi, you mentioned. Utami and Risa Sarah, I thought that was a really strong match as well. I think Risa Sarah's had a very underrated tournament. I think she's done a great job. Somebody that never gets enough credit, even back to the Ice Ribbon days. She too had her Mirai-esque haters when she was champion, but they... you know, they're not around anymore to talk about Stardom. Like I said, Mirai haters went from the mud to an endangered species. They're below the mud. They're heading towards the center of the earth as we speak, Striga. We can't find them. It's impossible right now because of these great matches, which she has plenty of. The other match I think everyone would point to would be the Julia versus Starlight Kid match.
Yes.
Which was an epic brawl, pretty much like a hate-filled brawl. They set that up with an angle. Earlier in the show where they announced the debut of Rina Yamashita coming into Stardom, the team with Julia, and basically everyone attacked everybody, like Oedo Tai jumped everybody, but then Yamashita saved Julia, and then it led to the main event where Julia attacked Starlight Kid, and had just a wonderful hate-filled brawl. They had the factions warring with Donna Damando and Oedo Tai at the start, and then it got to the ring, and Julia was tearing the mask. And Julia's just had a great run. I mean, again, Julia's an amazing talent. Everyone knows this, I think. But I've really loved her run, especially lately. She had the match versus Starlight Kid and then Natsupoi.
Yeah.
Where it was like, suddenly we're going to have these hate-filled brawls, pretty much. And, like, I love it. Like, bring me more of this. Although the Natsupoi one was not as good as Starlight Kid. But I thought that Starlight Kid-Julia match was one of the best of the whole tournament.
I agree with that. I also want to point out for Blue Stars, the just on one of the more recent shows from Hamamatsu, the Saya Kamitani versus Hazuki match. Overall, I think that Hazuki has had an incredible tournament. Finally, she is back to where I had her when she retired. I really like all her explosiveness, all of her cradles, the diving senton looks very, very strong. Her suplexes are good, like total package right now.
Yeah, and I think it shows where she's, like when she retired, I really think that she was on reputation alone, because she wasn't that great.
Let me reiterate, where I thought she should have been when she retired, yes. Like one or two years prior to that, actually.
But back then, everyone had all the high expectations for her, and she lived up to him somewhat, but then by the end she got burned out, and who knows what happened. It's all a lot of speculation. Sure. But now she's back, and she's awesome. Like, she's doing great work. That's another brilliant booking move that Stardom made, which went against the grain, was everyone, when she turned to Stars, like babyface, everyone questioned it. It was like, she should be in a heel in the White Tie. But actually, it's led to her showing a lot more and doing great things.
She's incredible,
Her tag team run with Kogama has been, I think they're one of the best tag teams, although they recently lost the tag titles. Unfortunately, Tom Nakano, Natsupoi, that told a story, whatever. Like, they're cool, nothing against them. I love Tom Nakano, first of all. But they were a great team, and I really loved what she did in that team. And now in this tour, she's gotten a big run early on, but to me, that also signifies that she's not going to win the black. You know, oftentimes when you get big winning streaks to start, you see things kind of come and even out by the time the tournament ends, and I think that's what we're going to see, and we're already seeing it with Hazuki, but her performance-wise level was very, very good. I think she's had a great tournament overall. Her match with Mirai was very good as well, the Hazuki-Mirai match. Love the using the sheer drop brain buster as her finishing move. I think that fits her really well, because she's not like... it's hard to explain her particular brand of charisma, because it's like, it's charismatic but also low-key in a way, which is kind of like the brainbuster as a move. It's like, it's not a complicated move, but it's still great. So, like, you know, at the end of the day, that's kind of like Hazuki. It's like, she's not like a dynamic, super charismatic, you know, promo and all that stuff. She's a great performer in her own way. And I think even Julia is like a kind of a low-key... And her aura and the way she carries herself is like super next level with Julia. But neither of those two are like... Tom Nakano is somebody I would consider like an explosive, charismatic performer. That just like, you know, frantic, like big energy and all of that. Hazuki's not like that. But she carries herself in such a way and wrestles in such a way that it works perfectly for her. So I really loved her tournament as well. Hazuki, a very, very good wrestler right now. I think she's doing the best work of her career. In general.
Yes, absolutely. So, Ami Sarai, Dylan, with 10 points, also up here. I thought that Ami had an incredible match with Mirai, once again, here. Match itself was good, but the finish really brought it out for me. It was an incredible finish with her. I don't know what the move is called, actually. The Raiden Shiku is the move.
Basically, like the Thunderbolt Driver.
Yeah, exactly. Variation of that. More vertical spike than the Thunderbolt Driver.
Now you're thinking of Fire Thunder. Like hers is...
Yes, exactly. So Ami Sarai, really like her tournament so far.
Yeah, she's really good. Very young wrestler, but just had the main event a couple of days ago against Iwatani. Decent match there.
Yeah, was a little disappointed by that, actually.
Why? Especially because better matches were on the undercard. If it would have been an undercard match, I think it would have been more palatable. You know, like instead, it's like you've got these better matches, like, you know, on the undercard. Then suddenly, here's the main event with Ami Sarai. But I kind of like what they're doing, because the company itself is very hot right now, so they can put anybody in the main event. Like, that show did a huge number that she was in the main event of. So the draw. Ami Sarai is proving herself. But, like, you're giving different people main event spotlights. We've seen Saki Kashima in the main events of this tournament so far. We've seen Micah in the main events. You're spreading it around the main event spots, which I think is very good. A very good thing for everybody involved. Although that match, I agree, was not the greatest main event. But still, she's had a good tournament. They've done a great job putting over the Thunderbolt Driver. where they made it a legit finish for this new player, and it's been her kind of X factor to where even when she's wrestling people, and like that Mayu match, it was very obvious Iwatani would win because of the way the points were set up and because it's Iwatani and she's her. But the Thunderbolt Driver is kind of like her ace in the hole that you can never count out, no matter who she faces. So they've done a great job promoting her, and it's obvious that they have big plans for her because, I mean, her size is very big. She's got the power game. It will make her stand out. And I think that I think it's very smart of them to do that. So I think that she's not been a standout player in this particular tournament with so many standout players, but I like them, what she's doing for her role and for her experience level.
Yes, so that is the top of the block here. Mayu Iwatani, we mentioned, with her main event. Who else is there to point out to?
Yeah, I mean, like, this tournament's been really strong, in my opinion. I think pretty much everybody has, you know, there's not a lot of weak links in this tournament overall.
I'm just looking at this block, too, and I could really mention, well, Hanan has been okay, I would say, but not a weak link. Okay.
The thing is, her role is to have, like, it's kind of like, you know, we were talking about Kenya in the N1, where she's always at the start not having long matches. Future Stardom Champion, like you said, nothing. It's not like she's going to have even a top 10 match in this tournament, probably. But she's going to, like, her role is to be the opening match person, which she's been all year as Future of Stardom Champion. So yeah, she's the bottom, like, if you were going to pick somebody, it would be her. But I think that that's by design more than anything.
Yeah, and even Sayahida already had her moment when she beat Momo Watanabe. So, yeah, I agree with that. Very strong block.
Sayahida also rules in general as well. Yep. She's also pretty great. You know, here's the thing. I'm going to say something controversial. I didn't love the match with Kamatani that everyone was talking about as much as other people did. In general, I think Kamatani, to me, she's pushed as a big star.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been the white belt champion for a long time, but there's some things that I'm not super in love with about her game, and I don't think I ever have been. Like, you know, I've had these issues before, but I don't think she's a top tier, like a great wrestler overall. She has certain parts of her that are great, and then there's some spots where it's not what it should be, kind of. It just in my opinion. So I will say that about Saya, that I think that she has a way to go to fit her push, but I mean, she carries herself so well.
That was exactly the phrase that I was looking for, the way to fit her push. Yes, that's it.
But a lot of people love her, so I mean, maybe I'm just on this crazy island, but I mean, when I watch her wrestle, there's still, and I mean, it's clear, you look at her moveset, and this is somebody you could also apply this criticism to, she's clearly Saya Busa when it comes to, like, you know, her moveset, the Falcon Arrow, the Phoenix Splash, the Firebird Splash. But he was a sloppy guy, too, as well, at points. You know, so it's clear she's very inspired by that. But there's some stuff I wish she would execute a little bit better going in there. But always good. Like, you know, it's not, I'm not trying to hound on her or anything. But compared to, like, a Suzu, who's a complete package, she has 0 points in this tournament, which is deceiving because she didn't wrestle a lot early on in the early part of the tournament, so she has less matches than a lot of people. But still, like, you're looking at one person at the bottom. I think Suzu is like a complete package of a performer, and they haven't really gotten around to pushing her yet. And that's somebody I would like to see more wins for, and which I do think they will get there by the end. But, you know, Tall Saya, again, good performer, very charismatic, and spectacular moves that nobody else could do. I hope that she can still grow her game a little bit. And it's just my opinion. I know it's maybe an outlier, but maybe, you know, Kamatani hater. Will I be in the mud by the end of the tournament?
Maybe. We'll see. But I certainly get where you're coming from with her. Still, though, I think that she's having a good tournament. Liked most of her matches that she had. Very spectacular all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's good. Yeah, so for the Red Stars block right now, as we're talking, we have a tie on top with 3 wrestlers at 10 points. That's Asumi with 3 matches left, Maika with 2 left, and Himeka with 1 match left. Is it? I'm just looking. Koguma still has 4 matches left, and she's at 8. Mai Sakurai with 2 left is at 8. Shuri with 8, also 2 matches left. So it's going to be someone within these names that I just mentioned. So who is it going to be?
So to me, it could go a lot of different ways when it comes to this. You know, they've set up everybody, you know, pretty good. How many matches does Nakano have left?
Nakano has... Oh, yeah, right. Oh, I missed her. She has 4 matches left.
That's who I think will win.
That was my
prediction. But both of these were my predictions at the start of the tournament.
Julia Nakano would be a great final, yeah.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Their rivalry. Tom just won the tag titles, the Goddesses of Stardom tag titles, mm-hmm. so that's interesting. I think that may be her role for the near future. But you have something to call on, a big main event to put in the final. I think that would be good. I also think of everyone else, Utami would be who I think would be the favorite. She came back. She bounced back with the long hair of starting this tournament now. Earlier in the year, she had the haircut.
Utami is also one that I missed. Actually, she has 5 matches left.
Yeah, so it would be one of those two, I would
Nakano
say.
Or Utami, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think any of the other ones will win. Although, if Azumi won, that would be the best possible match, yes. in my opinion. But yeah, I think it'll be either Tom or Utami.
Yes. So yeah, Red Stars block, Dylan. I gotta say, this tournament really turned me into a Himeka fan, because I think she has been outstanding in most of her matches. I was a big fan of her match against Saya Kamitani.
There are different blocks, but they had a white belt match.
Now that's the match I was pointing to. Yes.
Yeah. By the way, just to clarify real quick. They had this show in the middle of the tour, which was not like necessarily a tournament show. It was all about Nanai Takahashi challenged for the red belt. It was Stardom x Stardom, right? And they had Nanai Takahashi in the main event. Yeah. And Himeka, and then that was originally going to be Kairi Hojo, and I thought that was actually not a great match. Honestly, I think it would have been a lot better if Kairi had been there. But that's the victim of expectations. It was still a good thing, but you know, Himeka's good. Like she's a power wrestler.
Yeah, that's really the approach that I like right now in Stardom. I think that she's doing that very well. I also came away much more of a fan of the Risa Sarah match that Himeka had than most of Cagematch users with 6.65. I don't know. I really like what she's doing. I like how she carries herself, very confident. So yeah, that's I wouldn't say that she's the best performer in this block by any means, but that's probably the one that I came away liking more than I liked before the tournament.
They tried with her a couple of years ago. They put her in the finals of the tournament.
Mm-hmm. Didn't work out then.
No, it wasn't that great. Her run then definitely was not kind of lackluster, considering what like I said, the level of her push, you know, at the end of the day, when you put those expectations on somebody, that adds to it. But yeah, she's always been a fine worker. I haven't always loved her in Stardom. I really liked her more in the Indies when she was Himeka Arita. She had her full name back then. Maybe that's what it was. But, you know, Jumbo Princess, good power worker. Like I said, always has a good spot in the tournament. I wouldn't say necessarily a super standout, but definitely nothing you could probably be like, oh, no, that sucked, or anything like that. I think she's a very good worker overall. And Micah as well, who's our tag team partner, I think is very, very underrated, actually. And she started off kind of slow, but they really gave her a lot of wins later on, so I'm very happy with what they did with her. So, those two have always... It's like 2 years ago, they liked Himeka better. Last year, they gave Micah more of a push, and now they're kind of at the same level. So they got around pretty much with them.
Yes, except for that, Dylan, what are the top matches in the tournament? What do we have?
Yeah, Red Block... any Azumi match is always the best one. And
was Micah was very strong too, yeah.
Yeah, and also any Shuri match is also up there as well. A lot of people would point to her rematch versus Utami very early on in the tournament as a great match, which I agree with. But Shuri's first 2 matches were against Azumi and Utami, and those were both incredible performances, I would say, overall. The Red Mouth match versus Nanae, by the way, was a very good match, in my opinion.
I saw that too, yeah.
Yeah, I like that. The tournament itself, you know, you've got a lot of good performers here, so it's very hard to break out in terms of specific ones like that. And this block in particular, compared to Blue Block, I think has not had the top matches that you'd say. It's still, I'm not hating on it. It's just a good block overall, but you have some weak links here, and you got like Mai Sakurai, you have Asaki, who again, there's this conundrum of like, is she good or not? That's just a $1 million question, because sometimes I think,
found out.
yeah, because like sometimes you think, oh yeah, she's pretty good, and then you watch her in other matches, you're like, she's not that great, actually. What's that all about? So it's very interesting overall. But I think Risa Serra is another one that's had a lot of good matches in the tournament. I think she's an underrated performer in general. Utami. Koguma, I've really enjoyed a lot of her run as well.
Yeah, she's good.
But she's a unique player because she bridges comedic stylings in addition to wrestling. Like the match versus Shuri, you had the greatest bear pose spot ever, where Shuri was just enraged at this going in there. And Koguma versus Micah too was another fun one where they've done that storyline all year.
Oh yeah, the Micah and Utami match was very good, specifically for the upset.
Yeah, totally. I like that match a lot. Micah's another one I think has had a great tournament overall. But, you know, overall, you get all the top names in there. You're going to have a lot of really good to great matches. When you see some of the shaky names, but even in some of the like lower tier girls, I think Momo Kogo has had some really good matches in the tournament.
She did.
You know, Sakurai has shown improvement from where she was unquestionably last year. I think she's much improved. Still not at the level of some of these other ones, but still a very good performer. Saki, again, it's like Jekyll and Hyde performer, kind of. You know, like good, bad, we don't know, good type of deal. But overall, you know, all of the big players are up there. Tom Nakano has had some very emotional performances. I think, again, winning the tag belts in the middle of the tour will mean something for them. Hopefully, they do some good things going forward with all of that. But yeah, very good block, very good tournament overall with that. And I like what we've seen from pretty much everybody, all the big names.
Yes, so as we're talking, we still have 8 shows left in the tournament. The next set of shows starting on September 11 in Yokohama, then Kurken on the 12th, and with that, we're slowly but surely going to the finishing stretch in Kurken Hall once again on the 23rd of September. The Bell Sal, I think that's also in Tokyo on the 24th. Tada Nobawa is part of Tokyo. And the final of the tournament on October 1st from the Musashino Forest Sports Plaza. I've never heard about that arena, but that is a sport complex in Chofu, west of Tokyo. Holds around 10,000 people, so that's going to be interesting what they draw there. With the finals and also the last of the block stages, so that's going to be a packed show with lots of short matches, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. I look forward to it. I think that we're going to have some big matches. I think the winner, whoever it is probably going to be a really emotional moment. And, you know, it's going to be a big moment and going to set up some big things because I think Shuri's red belt title reign, you know, I've seen some negative comments on her title reign, actually, which is... I've seen that a lot where people aren't too enthused. Even that Nana match, like a lot of people weren't a big fan of that, but I liked it. And I liked her old title reign. I think all of her matches have actually been really good, you know, that she's done. And by regardless of that, I think we are winding that down. I think the winner of this tournament will win the title at the end of the year show, and it should be pretty great overall.
Yeah.
One other thing I will mention, too, throughout the tournament that was really cool. They had... an announcement, that same show where Yamashita came out to back up Julia, they announced that the tournament for the IWGP women's title, the seeding of it will be, they did this draw, so they cut out Cosmic Angels and God's Eye.
Yes.
So that ruins my dream of Mirai.
So goofy.
Yeah, but I liked it, though, because I'll tell you why. Like the draw, I mean, I wish they just let all the factions be represented and then had two wild cards instead of do all this international like nonsense or whatever. Like just let all the factions have a representative instead of the draw or whatever. But basically they said the ones who will be in the tournament are going to be based around whoever has the highest score in the 5-star Grand Prix. So it's like if you're a Stars wrestler and Koguma has the most points by the end, she'll be the Stars representative. if Mayu has the most points, she'll have the representative. I love the idea of adding extra stakes to the tournament beyond just winning them. And I think that's another thing that the G1 did get right this year was the semifinals. You can now say Tama Tonga is a block winner without necessarily having, you know, to give up anything real. Like, it gives you an accomplishment without sacrificing something. It gives you an extra stake to have in the tournament besides just winning, because that's a big deal for somebody to win the block. Here, even if you don't win the block or the tournament, you could still win enough to get into the tournament for the IWGP women's title. So I think that's going to be something to look out for. I think that's a very cool stipulation to have on. I think that's something they should think about. Maybe for a, like, in the G1, so to speak, or an N1 or whatever, have whoever has the most points, you know, set up something with that. Like, do some kind of storyline where you can set up a somebody where the points will matter even beyond winning. So I really like that. I wanted to mention that. They're setting up the IWGP title. That's still not until November. They announced a match for that with some mixed tags and stuff. We'll preview that when the time comes. But it was a cool thing to set up that for the tournament, in my opinion.
What do you think about the announcements for the European bracket?
Who's in the European bracket? I saw Alpha Female and...
And the other one is, her name is Ava?
Yeah, I saw her promo she cut on Twitter. Is that it? That's the only match we know? That's not a bracket.
No, that's two. I think that's two wrestlers that will be represented on that tour.
Well, they're going to.
Double shot.
Yeah, they said like the winner of that will be in the tournament. Pretty much.
Okay.
That match.
Yes.
Alpha Female,
The announcement didn't really like the World of Flair.
Alpha Female is like an OG Stardom wrestler.
Yeah, she is.
Though she was like the second ever red belt champion besides Nane. So it was like it was a brief run.
Ava White, by the way, is the name. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of European wrestling, so like, and Alpha Female, even back then, I wasn't. She's cool, like, but it's nothing.
Since she's been in Stardom, and Stardom has so many new fans that don't remember her, that the reaction really was very lackluster, but they had to expect that.
Yeah, but you know, maybe she'll get a chance to show out. She'll have a little bit of a power role. She's another power type of wrestler.
Yeah,
okay. if you've never seen her before, you know, which they've got a couple of those now on the roster. She might be able to clash with at some point. You know, I think she'll definitely beat Ava to get in. You get into the tournament, that'll be something. Whoever beats her, that'll be something you can point to that has history to it. Even though maybe people don't remember it, I definitely agree with that. But I think that if they bring back Haley Hatred, that's really going to impress me.
Yes.
You know, overall. Or where's Chelsea Diamond at?
Mischiefster Wrestling.
I don't think she wrestles anymore. But I don't think she was in Stardom that much either, to be honest. But.
Okay.
Yeah, like, but definitely not to a major role. But who knows?
Oh, she like, was a Shimmer wrestler.
Yes, she was a Shimmer wrestler. Yeah, like overall, I don't know, but yeah, Alpha Female. She's coming back for a run here. Hopefully, she's inspired. She hasn't even wrestled that much like the last couple of years. So
no, she has not.
Yeah,
don't know what you can expect from her really. Yeah,
good luck to her. I hope she has a great run. Like, you know, I'm not a big fan of European wrestling, but I try to be open-minded to people going in there. Just like Jack Morris. Like look at that. He showed us something.
This brings us back to our point initially here with Jack, just giving him a chance. And I guess that also concludes our talk about these two tournaments, Dylan. This has been a show that I didn't expect to go that long, to be quite honest, but these two tournaments were really large and brought out... Well, the Stardom one was much larger, is much larger, of course. It brought out a lot of stories and a lot of things that you could tackle and talk about. So, very interesting stuff, I would say.
Yeah, I totally agree. Obviously, like I said, we talked more about the N1 because it's over. Like Stardom, we'll see what happens with that. Hopefully, we can talk about it again because I think the tournament itself has been...
Yeah, we will at the end of the month. I got some more time to dive into that.
Yeah, like to me, this has been a very, very high level tournament, like up and down. You know, I think it's the best of all of them so far, just in terms of in ring quality. We'll see what happens with the final. Like maybe there's some kind of crazy swerve plan that's gonna upset everybody. But right now, it looks like things are going kind of how I thought they would. So we'll see if things change with that, or if something crazy happens, or maybe there'll be another. I mean, and plus the thing, like, this roster is so strong, it's impossible for it not to be great. It feels like, you know, they're only adding to it with people like Kyrie, who didn't even get to have her match. We'll see that at some point. Rina Yamashita, one of the best Joshi wrestlers ever, or at least right now, maybe not ever, but like right now for sure. And now you bring her into it. You're giving different styles. Like, there's power wrestlers, there's high speed wrestlers, there's technical wrestlers, there's strikers, there's charismatic people, there's, you know, there's everybody pretty much in this tournament. There's rookies, veterans. You know, you get so many different types of styles, so many great matches, that it's almost impossible for this tournament to fail. And it's played out that way. And the attendance has been very high, and the crowds have been there too. Like, even the ones that attend, they're there to have a good time. They're into these shows. You know, we talked about some other shows off the air. You know, you look at the big shows, maybe like the Kobe World shows, the Peter Pan shows. The fans weren't really into those, you know, even the ones that showed up for them, you know. And so it's good to see the Stardom fans in there. I know that we're heading towards full cheering and everything for other promotions, you know, by hook or crook. It seems like they're going to get there. They're going to do whatever it takes to get there, you know. But even the Stardom fans there, I think they make it. Yeah, they're always into the shows. I think that's because the shows are actually good. So the fans actually like good shows. And that's proven with these Stardom shows. And somebody mentioned to me, I think it was Timma, he was saying that, like, everybody puts in an effort, from the production to the wrestlers to even the booking. They make these shows feel like something to be at. Like, they like feel like an event each time out. And I think they've done a great job with that. And hopefully we see more. But yeah, they've had a great run of Corcoran Hall, much bigger than even my greatest expectations at this tour. And hopefully we can see some big shows coming forward out of that. I think the momentum is only going to grow the more they do intermingle with New Japan, which they're on the horizon of doing as well. And that's another one I can't wait to see going forward. And as I said, keep your eyes peeled on the Patreon. I will cover every single match, which I have done.
Every single match. That's it, Dylan. Yeah, I want to thank you for making the time today. I really got to go and start editing this before I got to take a nap before All Out starts. It's going to be a long show.
let me ask you something, Sugar, before we get off the air.
Just what are you quick looking one, Dylan, please.
What are you looking forward to at All Out?
I'm really looking forward to the Danielson and Jericho match. I think Jericho has been great this year, and I think they're going to play a lot of shenanigans, of course, in this one, but that has a lot of interest for me.
I think Danielson is great, and that's as far as I will go on that match. I really loved his match versus Daniel Garcia a couple weeks on Dynamite.
Yes.
But they got some good stuff on that show. WH Park, shout out from Post Wrestling.
Is yeah, he's
at their show. Yeah, he's going to be there in attendance. There, I was talking to him about it earlier, and this man, he got some Panda Express I saw on his Twitter.
Yes.
I thought that was interesting. You're going in there. I won't say
anything. We're not going to talk about Panda Express, Dylan. I want to close the show now.
Okay, fine.
Shout out to WH, though. this show is going to come out after All Out anyway, so previewing anything on that one. So, for these two topics I hope you enjoyed this show. And I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank you once again, Dylan, for doing this. This has been the Eastern Lariat. Goodbye.
Sayonara.
Streaming worldwide. This is the MLWRadio.com network.